transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
We're happy to welcome back to the show Dr. Zach Levine, an ER doctor at the Montreal General Hospital, talking about stomach pain and how important it is to figure out what could be causing it. Is it a simple tummy ache or something more serious? We're then joined by entertainment reporter Ryan Carter, talking about the tragic death of Philip Seymour Hoffman, as well as the allegations against Woody Allen by his estranged daughter Dylan. We wrap things up with a chat with Sean Meehan of the country group Me and May and play their catchy new song, Love Me, Leave Me Lonely.
Capture your need for sound.
A topic that no one really wants to talk about in public, and even sometimes with their doctor, is normal bowel habits. A lot of people feel self-conscious about the subject and would rather keep quiet than find out what's going on. Joining us to talk about bowels as well as other abdominal pain is Dr. Zachary Levine, an ER physician at the Montreal General Hospital. Dr. Zach, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thanks, Kelly. Good to be here.
So, first of all, Zach, what are some important facts that you should know about your bowels to keep yourself healthy and to also know, I guess, if something is wrong?
Well, I guess there's a few things to know. I mean, first of all, it's important to know that everyone is different. It sounds cliche, but it's true. Everyone has different... What's normal for you is not the same as what's normal for me is not the same as what's normal for someone else. So if you're worried that you're going to the bathroom too often or you're not going to the bathroom enough, that may just be your normal pattern. And so in terms of what's normal, I'll just mention this, what's normal in terms of frequency can be anything from going 3 times a day to going 3 times per week. And that really just varies for individuals. It obviously varies depending on your diet and how much exercise you do. And generally, the general advice is, if you want, for healthy bowels, is to try and get as much fiber as you can. Fiber being things like whole grains and wheat and corn bran and seeds and also fruits and vegetables. That's helpful. And also getting hydrated enough, so drinking enough, especially water. Hydration isn't really alcohol, it isn't really coffee or tea, because that stuff doesn't actually hydrate you that well. And exercise, that's another thing that's really important. The more you exercise, the more things get moving. The more that you're sitting and not moving, the less you're helping your bowels to actually move. So the important thing is there's a big range of what's normal. And people do worry about it a lot. They don't talk about it a lot, but... I was looking, one of the numbers I saw was that constipation alone, and that doesn't, there's constipation, then there's diarrhea, and then there's nausea, vomiting, there's belly pain, but constipation alone accounted for 2 million doctor visits in the U.S. last year. So that's a fair number. And I work in the emergency department, and I see people coming in for constipation too. I mean, obviously I see people for a lot of different reasons, gastroenterological reasons, but constipation alone brings people to the emergency department, so it's not always something that's totally benign. It can give people significant discomfort.
Because of the quote-unquote taboo nature of, bowel movements and all of that, do you think a lot of people suffer needlessly in pain, Zach?
Yeah, I think so. I think definitely, and oftentimes it's some people have a very low threshold to consult the doctor, but other people have a really high threshold to consult the doctor. So there's definitely a group of people who just won't go see the doctor unless it's really, really, really severe or unless it's been going on for a long, long, long time. And part of the problem is, people don't necessarily know what's worrisome, what's dangerous, so if they're used to having a bowel movement every day, they don't have one for 3 days, then they may get really worried. Whereas some people may have something like blood in their stool or fever or a lot of vomiting and getting dehydrated, but they just won't go to the doctor because, either they don't think it's important or they're just the type of people who don't like to go to the doctor.
Are a lot of people affected by IBS, because we hear about that a fair amount, I would say, especially on, commercials during soap operas.
Yes, I mean, it's definitely, there are a lot of conditions, and we can talk about lots of them, and IBS is one of them. So IBS, which stands for irritable bowel syndrome, and which sometimes is confused with inflammatory bowel disease, which is IBD, but they're quite different. But IBS is quite common. And it's something, I think one of the reasons that we hear about it a lot is it's somewhat difficult to diagnose and somewhat difficult to treat, because it's not, as opposed to some other conditions where you can, they do a colonoscopy or a gastroscopy, that's where they look inside with a camera and they see what's going on. IBS is more symptom based, and it can, and it varies from person to person. So it's characterized by sort of chronic abdominal pain and discomfort and bloating. And but in some people it's more diarrhea, in some people it's more constipation. So it's not the same for different people. And also you need to rule out other things, including celiac disease and certain infections, before you can make the diagnosis of IBS. And because it's difficult to treat, there are a lot of people, you know, trying to sell different treatments out there. But ultimately, what we have find is certain, there are certain medications that work, but there's also, they've shown that things like soluble fiber are quite effective for helping it, in addition to other things like the stuff we talked about, including exercise and fluids and some medications that you can talk to your doctor about as well. But I wouldn't just go based on commercials, that's for sure.
Right, right. And I wanted to ask you, what other stomach issues are sort of prevalent out there that people should be, you know, aware of?
Absolutely. Well, you know, what's interesting about, we see where I work, I mean, in the emergency department, what I see a lot is people coming in for abdominal pain. You know, I mean, tons of people come in for abdominal pain. And one of the difficulties that we have as doctors, or I mean, we're trained for it, but it's difficult if you're not trained, is to figure out what's causing it, because there's actually tons of things that can cause abdominal pain. So the way that doctors figure it out is, number one, based on location, because if it's in the right upper part of the belly, it's more likely to do with your liver or your gallbladder. If it's in the top middle, it's more likely to do with your stomach. If it's on the left side upper, it's more likely to do with your pancreas or with your spleen. And then lower down, it's complicated as well. If it's lower down on the right, we always think of appendicitis, but in women, obviously, you have to think of things like ectopic pregnancy or things to do with the ovaries. On the left-hand side, it can be things like diverticulitis, or again, an ectopic pregnancy or an ovarian problem, or inflammatory bowel disease. There's lots of different things. And then, of course, there's all different systems that can cause belly pain. So even though now I'm talking primarily about digestive problems, there can be a lot of other things that are not even digestive that cause belly pain, including problems with the big vessels. So I'm talking about like the aorta. If you have a rupture of your aorta or a problem with the aorta, it can cause pain. Some people present primarily with vomiting from a heart attack. Some people with diabetes will present with abdominal pain. Urinary tract things. I mentioned gynecologic issues. And also actually sometimes people with pneumonia will just present with some upper abdominal pain because it irritates their diaphragm. What we look at is, number one, the location of the pain, but also the associated symptoms. And then obviously, if necessary, we do some other tests to try and figure out what it could be.
I've always wanted to know, Zach, you just mentioned it a couple of moments ago. Why do some patients, when they're having a heart attack, present with vomiting? I've always not understood the correlation between that.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of reasons. I mean, number one, the heart, it doesn't sense pain the way that the way that a lot of different parts. It doesn't cause a sharp pain. So that's one of the things that's important, is that, you know, if you're having a chest discomfort or chest heaviness, it's worth checking out. Just because you're not having chest pain, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're not having a heart attack. And because of the innervation of the heart, it usually, if you're having strain to the heart, it causes other symptoms as well, including nausea, vomiting, very commonly, including sweating, including dizziness. And that's all because of the way the nerves of the heart are set up. So they don't transmit pain the way, if you hurt your leg or you hurt your arm, it's very easy to localize, oh, it's a pain in the arm, whereas the heart, it's the nerves are set up so that the symptoms are more vague. So that's why it's important that people keep in mind other things if they're having nausea. And the things that make you think, well, maybe it's more the heart. I mean, a heart attack, if you're having a full-on heart attack, then you don't need to do, even if you're sitting around, you'll still get the symptoms. But in people who are having like a strain, a heart strain, then the symptoms will usually get worse when you're active. So if you're getting short of breath or nauseous or dizzy, every time that you do some exercise, every time that you walk, and it gets better when you stop, then you have to start thinking that that may actually be your heart and not your digestive tract, as opposed to most things that have to do, like, for example, gallstones, gallbladder disease. That's usually worse with eating, and especially eating fatty foods. So if every time you eat a certain food, you get a symptom like nausea or pain in your belly, then it certainly suggests it's more likely to do with your digestion than anything else.
What piece of advice, Zach, would you give to any of us listening right now with regards to knowing when we should, you know, maybe go see someone like you at the emergency, and when we should maybe either wait the couple of days to see the doctor or even just wait to see if it passes? I feel like, especially with the stomach, there's so much going on that it's kind of hard to figure out when to go and when to stay home.
Yeah, it's not always obvious, absolutely. So, you know, if, I mean, really, like anything, I guess you have to err on the side of caution, and you can never say, oh, you know, wait it out forever. But there's certainly some guidelines, you know. I mean, certainly if, number one is if you're having, you know, diarrhea, we all get diarrhea sometimes, and vomiting, and it can just be a gastroenteritis, which is usually a virus. And usually those things will resolve by themselves within 24 hours. If you ingest something, if you eat something that has some toxin in it, your body basically does a really good job of getting rid of it. And it's, so basically it vomits and it has diarrhea, so it gets rid of all the toxin, and then usually within 24 hours, you're fine. So sometimes if you're just having a bit of diarrhea, but you're able to stay hydrated, that's really the key point. If you're able to hydrate yourself, you're able to drink, and you're keeping it down, then usually you can stay home at least for a few hours and see, you know, if some grab all and see if you get better on your own. However, one reason I would say to come see the doctor is, number one, if you feel like you're getting dehydrated, so number one, you're not able to keep any fluid in, so as soon as you drink anything, it comes right back up, and that's fine for like an hour or two or even a few hours, but if really over a day or over 2 days that's happening and you're still not able to hydrate yourself, and this tends to be happen more quickly in children, obviously, because they're smaller, but that's a reason to get to the emerge, because oftentimes we'll have to give some fluid by the vein until you're able to digest again. Other reasons to come in, I would say, are pain. Any pain that's really severe and is not going away, I think you have to get it checked out. Blood is worrisome for us. If there's blood in your stool or blood in your vomit, unless it's just a tiny bit, and for example, you know you have hemorrhoids and sometimes they bleed a tiny bit, fine. But if you're having a significant amount of blood, it worries us, and it worries most people too, so luckily they usually come in. And other things would be if you find, and this is over long term, but if you find you're having weight loss for no apparent reason, if you're feeling very weak or dizzy or lightheaded or short of breath, anything like that, I would say, you know, consider coming to the doctor earlier rather than later. And then another thing would be in terms of color, since I was talking about blood, but black tarry stool tends to worry us. Red or maroon stool, because both of those can actually be blood.
Okay.
Whereas something like green stool or orange stool, if it comes and then it goes, those are usually more often than not related to things that people eat. So they're usually not they're not as worrisome as something like red or black tarry stool.
Okay.
And pale stool is another one that is worth getting checked out, because it may be a gallbladder issue.
Okay. Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is Dr. Zachary Levine, an ER physician at the Montreal General Hospital. If you have a history of ulcers in your family, I don't even know if that's genetic or hereditary, is that something you should be concerned about as, you know, the individual?
Yeah, well, it's something you should be aware about. You know, it's especially if you start to have any symptoms. So ulcers typically can cause some pain. So basically it's pain right in the middle, the upper middle part of your belly, which is where the stomach is, or sometimes a little higher if they're in your esophagus. And some people are certainly more prone to ulcers. One of the advances over the last, I guess, 10 or 20 years has been that we've found, because it used to be we blamed a lot of ulcers on stress. And there's no question stress can be related to a lot of different diseases. But what we found is there's also a bacterial component. So there's a bacteria called H. pylori, which can be pretty easily tested for in the blood and in a breath test as well, which is related to to ulcers. So this bacteria has been found to be responsible for a lot of ulcers. And if we find that someone has that, then it's treatable with antibiotics for a couple of weeks, and usually it will eradicate the bacteria which is causing the ulcers. So this is all to say, if you know that there are ulcers in your family, it's something to keep in mind. And if you start to have symptoms, usually it's not something you screen for. actually, we should we'll mention screening for one other thing, which is colon cancer. But ulcers is not usually something they'll do just screen for on everyone. Just do a test. But if you start to have symptoms, then definitely it's worth checking out. And by symptoms, I mean usually upper abdominal pain. Some people get reflux symptoms, which is like a heartburn, where they get pain that goes up from their stomach. They might get some acidity in their mouth. Sometimes ulcers will bleed, so you can get blood in the stool or black stool, or you can, or it can cause vomiting. So any of those symptoms, especially if you know people in your family have had ulcers, should make you think, you know, maybe it's worth checking it out.
And what main piece of advice do you want to leave us with, Zach, when it comes to belly pain or belly issues? Because I just want people to have sort of a lasting impression of what they need to keep in mind when it comes to that.
Sure. Well, so a couple things. Number one is keep in mind or try and figure out what's normal for you. So again, everyone's individual, and some people it's normal to go, as I mentioned, three times a day is normal for some people in terms of bowel movements, and three times a week is normal for some people. But what we really pay attention to, doctors, is if there's a significant change and there's no reason for it, especially as we get older. That's what makes us worry about certain things, including cancer. So if you have a significant change in your bowel habits, you start going much less frequently, much more frequently, or definitely, I mentioned before, blood is something that worries us, or black stools, or fever, or weight loss for no apparent reasons. Those are things that concern us. In terms of what you can do, I mean, I think the most important things you can do to have regular bowel habits and try and help yourself if you're having some discomforts or occasionally loose bowel movements or constipation are getting enough fiber, so things like whole grains and bread and cereal, raw vegetables and fruits, drinking enough fluids, and by fluids I mean primarily water, but certainly I don't include alcohol and caffeinated beverages in fluids like tea and coffee just because they don't hydrate you really. And finally, exercise. Exercise is really important in getting things moving. So even having, going for a good walk regularly, and that's true for so many medical issues that we've talked about, but exercise is really important. So having a healthy lifestyle will help you have healthy bowel movements as well.
Dr. Zach, thank you so much for your time this week. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks, Kelly.
That's Dr. Zachary Levine, an ER physician at the Montreal General Hospital.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
It's been an active week in entertainment news, and joining us to help navigate what's going on is entertainment reporter Ryan Carter. Ryan, thank you for being with us on the Kelly Alexander Show.
No worries, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, we have to talk about this phenomenal actor, people calling him PSH, but of course, Philip Seymour Hoffman, tragically left us, passing way too soon, if I can say that, at the young age of 46. And Ryan, it seems like this is another case of addiction rearing its ugly head. Were you actually surprised to hear of his death, or in your mind, was this just like, oh, here goes another one?
Well, you know what? I think I was definitely surprised. And I think a lot of people within the industry and the public were surprised as well. I mean, we kind of never really had the sense that addiction was something that Philip Seymour Hoffman had faced until about a year ago when he mentioned that he'd been seeking some help for some heroin problems and prescription pill problems. And it was at that time he sort of revealed that in his 20s, he'd suffered with, you know, problems with addiction back then. But I mean, the guy had been 20 years sober up until, you know, about a year ago. And so it was only, you know, then that we found out that there was a, you know, a glimmer of, you know, addiction that he was facing. And it was definitely a surprise and a shock to find out on the weekend that he passed away. And yeah, I mean, even as the event passed on and we heard more information about what was actually found in his apartment, you know, there was this talk of up to 70 bags of heroin being found by police and all kinds of things. It's really sad, you know. I mean, this whole problem with drugs and addiction in Hollywood is ongoing. It can affect anybody, as you can see. It's not just for people who go out and party all the time. So definitely a huge loss.
Now, I remember hearing about him obviously going into rehab, and I remember at the time thinking, because I think it was something like 10 days, it was like a very short stint in rehab. And I remember thinking, how do you get yourself together in 10 days? Do you think he didn't take it seriously?
Well, you know what? I thought the same thing. And I think we've talked about this before in a different forum as well, that, you know, 10 days doesn't really seem like a long time to kind of, you know, even scrape the surface of an addiction. But from what we've sort of been hearing in the days after it happened, I guess there's commentary around, you know, maybe it was a preventative measure. Maybe he hadn't actually, you know, fallen off the wagon at that point per se, and was kind of just going in for a preventative period to kind of, you know, stop a relapse from happening. But you know what? I think he's the kind of guy, he's a phenomenal actor. He's he's always sort of been a bit reclusive in a sense and a very quiet kind of guy. So, you know, I don't know if taking it seriously was a problem for him, but, you know, addiction as a whole is a huge problem and a challenging one. It's not very simple and defined in easy terms.
A lot of Hollywood people, were very distraught over his death. You know, social media lit up like a Christmas tree immediately with their comments, not to mention, you know, regular folk like you and I having things to say. But how big is this loss? Like, I know I was very sad when James Gandolfini passed away. Is this in that ranks or even more?
Oh, look, I mean, it's very hard to kind of compare two different people and sort of decide if it's a greater loss for one or the other. But I mean, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman was a phenomenal character actor. I mean, he started out in television and, you know, worked his way into film. I think personally for me, I remember him in the first film role that I remember was he was in Twister, the tornado movie with Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton. And, you know, from there he built such a solid career, and he was a great actor, especially, you know, receiving an Academy Award for the movie Capote in 2005 was obviously an achievement and, you know, an indication of how great he was. He's received 3 Academy Award nominations since then. So, you know what, I think he was definitely an actor that excelled for someone in his generation, and his work is definitely going to be remembered for a long time. It'll be interesting to see how they pay tribute to him at the Academy Awards in just a couple of weeks.
In your opinion, is this death going to be just another Hollywood, you know, tragic death? Or do you think, you know, maybe there'll be some discussion and maybe, you know, of course it's not going to right the ship in grand scheme of things. But do you think this, because this is such a prolific actor, you know, he had everything going for him as far as I think you and I are concerned. Do you think this means anything, or is this just going to be another Hollywood story?
Look, I hope it means something. I mean, one actor that actually sort of, you know, came out publicly in the days after Philip Seymour Hoffman died was Sean Pyfrom, who was an actor from Desperate Housewives. And he sort of mentioned that he's been struggling with addiction for 8 or 9 years, and he sort of felt inspired and compelled in the news of Philip Seymour Hoffman's death to kind of speak out and say, look, hey, I've been facing this too, and this is a serious thing, and I think we need to discuss it more. So I would definitely agree with Sean on that. I think the conversation needs to continue. Obviously, we lost Corey Monteith last year, which was incredibly sad. So, yeah, I mean, I hope that the industry and community kind of pull together and figure out a way of, you know, tackling this so we don't lose any more amazing talents, because it really is just so unbelievably sad.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is entertainment reporter Ryan Carter. Make sure to follow him on Twitter at Ry Carter. Ryan, Dylan Farrow has written an open letter in the New York Times condemning certain Hollywood actors and behind-the-scenes type of people who, she says, you know, are supporting, and I guess who clearly are supporting her estranged adoptive father, who she alleges abused her as a child. What sort of effect in the long term will these allegations have on Woody Allen and his career, if anything?
You know what? I mean, Woody Allen has kind of always had his personal life, you know, become fodder for media and articles and magazines, you know, for as long as his career has been going around, really. I mean, this happened over 20 years ago, and, you know, it hasn't stopped people talking about it since. So, you know what? I think he's definitely put himself in a position to not necessarily respond or to kind of react to these allegations. But I mean, it's a pretty big, you know, thing to have happen. And, you know, it's extremely personal too. And I guess that's the sort of line to kind of bridge is, you know, how much do we pursue this story, or how much do, you know, we give these allegations airtime, you know, considering that it's a private family matter. And I know that that's been some of the commentary, especially from, you know, Cate Blanchett and Alec Baldwin, you know, in the days after this letter was kind of published, that, you know, this is a family matter and let them deal with it. But yeah, I mean, it's serious. It's extremely pointed and specific what she's alleging in this opinion piece. So, you know, who knows what'll come out of that in the coming weeks. But yeah, it's a serious kind of situation.
Do you think people will support her, or as sometimes happens, you know, condemn the alleged victim? Because I know we're sort of really early in this scenario where this letter has recently just come out.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think because of what's, you know, been written in the letter, and because of the serious nature of the allegations, there's obviously a lot to wade through and to kind of consider. I mean, if you kind of look back 22 years ago when these allegations first came out, the prosecutor who was in charge of the case decided that, you know, he didn't want to press charges. And there's sort of been some kind of indication that perhaps that wasn't necessarily due to a lack of evidence, but more to do with the fragile nature picture of Dylan at the time being such a young child. So, you know, it's difficult to kind of navigate, but I think that, you know, any sort of allegation of this kind of behavior ought to be investigated. It's incredibly distressing. But in terms of any sort of legal and court stuff, I don't think anything will come out of it. I'm assuming statute of limitations is well and truly done on this. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you've got to kind of feel for a victim in any kind of personal situation like this. And if what she's saying is true, then it's, you know, it's really, really upsetting.
Are you amazed at the amount of actors and producers and behind the scenes types of people who actually continue to support Woody? Like, obviously they're not, you know, publicly, supporting him, I would say, about this type of stuff. But I mean, we all know that he got involved with, you know, his adoptive daughter, the other one, and so on and so forth. So, it, you know, in a way, his dalliances, if you will, have been out and about for a while. So does it surprise you that Hollywood has continued to embrace him? I mean, he recently was honored for his work.
Yeah, absolutely. He was honored, you know, the recent awards season. Diane Keaton presented him with the award, or in his honor kind of thing. But look, I mean, I think it's tough to kind of, you know, be a part of the situation when you are external to it. But look, I think Woody Allen has kind of, you know, created himself this incredible career, and the people who are supporting him are, you know, supporting him based on their knowledge of him as a person. I mean, you can't really say whether the allegations that have been made are true or false, but, you know, everyone, I guess you kind of rally around your friend when something, you know, like this comes together. So I think, you know, I mean, you could read into it and kind of say that a lot of the commentary that's coming from people who are supporting him, especially within the industry, is quite innocuous in terms of, you know, whether it happened or it didn't happen, and more along the lines of, you know, this is a private matter. But I mean, yeah, it's kind of, I think if I were in that situation, if I knew someone well enough, or if I thought I knew someone well enough, I would support them. Whether I do that publicly or not is a different matter.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is entertainment reporter Ryan Carter. Make sure to follow him on Twitter at Rye Carter. Justin Bieber has been in the news too much lately, and for all the wrong reasons. And I don't know about you, Ryan, but one of the most disturbing images recently that I saw was, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, you know, a picture of him making sexual maneuvers, if you will, on the left breast of a stripper. What is going on? And do you think there are more of these pictures sort of waiting in the wings to see the light of day with regards to him and his crazy?
You know what? I have been talking about Justin Bieber solidly every week for, I swear, almost a year now. And as you would know, it's infuriating to kind of watch him self-destruct, especially, you know, with all the recent stuff that came out at the end of January, where he was, you know, arrested on alleged DUI and resisted arrest, expired driver's license. And then even in Toronto, Canada, he was, arrested for allegedly assaulting a limo driver. And then this photo comes out. I mean, and that's only really scratching the surface of Bieber's last 12 months. I mean, we've talked about this, you and I, many times, Kelly, about, you know, he's kind of part of this team that is essentially just a big yes brigade. He's kind of just been given open slather to do whatever he wants to do. And, you know, with kind of the suggestion that, hey, there's really no implications for what you're doing. I think he needs to go away. I think he just needs to, you know, shut down his social media, shut his personal life off from the rest of us, and sort himself out, and then come back, because it's literally so over the top.
And, you know, speaking of the Toronto situation where he was brought in and charged there for allegedly attacking a limo driver, you know, less than 2 days later, or just about 2 days later, you know, he was out partying at a Toronto nightclub. And so, and then, you know, like 24 hours later, he's flying a private jet down to New Jersey, which would get, you know, held at the airport there. And then he's off partying later that night for Super Bowl festivities. Does he care at all about his responsibilities? What has gone on in the last 3 weeks? And furthermore, it seems like he's trying to get, I don't know if he's trying to get street cred, or he just doesn't give a rat's behind about his image.
You know what? I think, you know, he's probably does. I think he does is concerned with his image and probably does think about it. But whether or not he cares if he's going out partying is a totally different matter. I mean, you know, I keep hearing people say, oh, he's 19. And one of his, you know, big defenders in the last couple of weeks has been Toronto Mayor Rob Ford. And I mean, if anyone's going to give you advice or, you know, support, I don't know if Rob Ford's the person you want, but he even said on a radio show that the guy's 19 and think back to when you were 19. But yeah, I think back to when I was 19, I certainly wasn't getting arrested for alleged DUIs. You know, it's kind of a little bit extreme if you think about it. So I think he's, but in saying that, I think he's doing a lot of things that some 19-year-olds do. A lot of 19-year-old boys get into trouble, but the difference with him is it's in the public spotlight. So maybe he needs to consider, you know, what he's putting out there and kind of, you know, maybe have a change of heart. It could work out for him if he does that.
What does your gut say, Ryan? Is there more room for him to strangle himself with the rope?
Oh, I think so. I mean, like, it's gotten to this point. You kind of think, well, how much further could it go? But I feel like he surprises us now. It got to the point where you're like, oh, okay, I kind of expected that he would get arrested someday, but then it just keeps happening. So who knows? Like, who knows what he's going to get up to, you know, throughout this year and beyond that? Let's just hope that someone finally stands up and knocks some sense into him so that he can kind of get things back on track. Because when you kind of look at, you know, the nuts and bolts of it, he is a talented guy. He can sing, he can perform. He's got that kind of, you know, star quality to him, but it's all this personal stuff that's really derailing him. And who knows, maybe it's part of this big constructed plan to, you know, give him this legitimate bad boy image, and maybe we're all suckers and we're all just falling for it. I don't know if that's true, but hey, you know, who knows? In 6 months' time, we might have all been played, you know?
Mm-hmm. And last question, and I know it's hard, you know, and I'm sure some people actually get angry at people like you and I who are people who report on entertainment, but I personally have a huge problem with the fact that his dad, from what we understand, has been partying with him at some of these locations. And, you know, I know you're not supposed to judge anyone, and I'm really trying not to, but I'm so angry at the parents for seemingly not stopping this.
Yeah, look, I mean, I've kind of always said you never really know the reality of a situation unless you're part of it. So, I mean, yeah, I definitely kind of feel that from, you know, what you said about other outside people saying that who are we to kind of comment on it. But yeah, I mean, you would kind of expect that, you know, between his mom and his dad, there would be some kind of, you know, some kind of process or some structure put in place to kind of say, hey, like, maybe what you're doing isn't the right thing. Maybe this isn't beneficial. With his dad partying with him, I don't think that's necessarily the best idea, but who knows? Like, maybe he is trying to talk him out of it and isn't having very much success with it. But you would hope so. You would hope that, you know, he's got at least a couple of people around him to kind of say, hey, look, we're worried about you, and this is not necessarily the best track to go down, so why don't we kind of just rein it back in? So who knows? Hopefully he'll get back on track soon.
Excellent. Ryan, thank you so much for this. We really appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks, Kelly.
That is entertainment reporter Ryan Carter. Again, follow him on Twitter at @RyCarter.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We're excited to welcome an exciting new country band called Dark Horse onto the show. This band is very versatile, not only focusing on a country sound, but also with rock and pop sensibilities. Joining us is lead singer Paul Lane. Paul, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you, Kelly. I'm glad to be part of it.
Excellent. So I wanted to, you know, sort of kick things off by discussing, you know, the band itself. First of all, how did you come upon the name Dark Horse, and was it sort of an interesting journey to form the band?
Yeah, well, I came from the sort of rock side of things first off in my career, and sort of slowly got roped into the country music side of things. And initially, when I started writing the record, I didn't even know I was writing a record.
Okay.
Just started writing some songs. I was working with Tommy McDonald from Headley on a couple of songs that he was working on, and he, you know, literally asked me one day, would you consider writing some country music for some artists I know that are up and coming? I said, sure, I'd give it a crack, but, you know, had no idea if I could do it or not. And ended up writing some songs for Stacey McKittrick and Kylie Epp, some sort of up and coming country artists here in Canada, and discovered, wow, it's really not that much different than what I'd already been doing. And so I started writing songs for myself. And upon, you know, getting a few songs together, I realized this is kind of becoming a project. This is maybe possibly going to be a record. So by the time I'd written my fourth or fifth song, I realized, man, I got to form a band. And this is something that just feels really right, you know, really right for me now as a writer. And that sort of is what was the initial forming of Dark Horse. Now the name, I had to come up with a name for the band, and I the only thing that I could think of was that gambling term. It's like, this is such a long shot that anyone would ever get this, because I realized, you know, we're kind of creating our own little genre here. You know, it's just rock enough to be rock, but it's, you know, it's just slightly country enough to be country. So And I thought, you know, people are going to crucify us the moment we get out there and they hear this. But so far, you know, I'm very, very surprised. I'm surprised at the reaction to the songs. And you know, I really, really hope that we can just keep moving forward as a band. So, yeah, it came from a gambling term. Came from, you know, dark horse meaning something that, you know, can possibly rise to prominence and win when unexpected. And that's kind of, you know, where we come from.
Now, when you were writing, did you mainly stay, you know, in British Columbia and do that? Or did you go to Nashville and do that up? Because I know a lot of people sort of head down there for inspiration, if nothing else.
Yeah, you know, I started going down to Nashville, not really to write for this record, but just I've been invited by a couple guys down there who are writing and other writers I know saying, hey, you know, we like the stuff that you're doing for Stacey McKittrick and Kylie. Why don't you come down and try writing with some of our writers? But you know, I went down to Nashville and I ended up at the ASCAP building, just sort of, you know, going from room to room, writing with all these writers. And it kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. Nothing against Nashville, but I kind of like to craft songs more. So I realized, nah, I kind of got to do this record. You know, I went down there hopeful that I could write with somebody. But I ended up just coming back home and finishing the record here.
Is it a bit like an assembly line down there? I've always wondered that. Like, it just sounds like, you know, almost like Los Angeles is as well for cranking out pop tunes. Like, is that sort of the same situation?
I think that is a great description. Now, the people down there obviously doing good work, just like LA, are sitting in the room and putting in the time. So often with songwriting, that's sort of the key element is, you know, you got to stay in the room until it's done. And I find a lot of sessions in Nashville, it's like you've got 2 hours and that's it. And nobody cares what you come out with. You know, everyone just kind of throws the kitchen sink at it. A lot of sessions like that sort of left a bad taste in my mouth. And I realized, okay, my whole life I've been more of a crafting kind of writer as opposed to just throw it against the wall and see if it sticks.
Okay. Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is lead singer Paul Lane of Dark Horse. Make sure to check them out on their website, darkhorseofficial.com. I have to tell you, Paul, when I was getting the information about the band and stuff, when I Googled your name, up came Katy Perry. So I just wanted to tell you that obviously her song Dark Horse on her new album. So I just thought it was funny. I was like, I'm going to have to tell Paul this, that he's hanging out with Katy Perry on Google. So
right. Yeah, we're either fortunate or unfortunate enough to be associated now with a whole bunch of different things. George Lucas has a company called Dark Horse.
Oh, God,
well.
That's awesome. Okay.
Right.
I wanted to ask you as well. Well, you know, speaking of Katy Perry and stuff, is there an artist or a band or producer that you would love to work with, you know, to either collaborate with on a song for Dark Horse or for some other, you know, sort of solo project that you might be working on?
Oh, yeah. There's tons, man. There's tons. Where would I start? I would love to write a song for Keith Urban. That dude's got to hire me.
Okay. We're going to make sure we're going to put that out there. And
yeah, right.
I'll make sure to hashtag it in my Twitter feed. So.
Yeah, man. You know, there's lots of good stuff too that I'm just kind of discovering. I mean, the music world now is funny because we, you know, so often now we find out about stuff on YouTube, you know, and there's music that you would have never heard of unless people will connect you via social media, you know, rather than just traditional radio formats. There's that whole world out there now, which is bringing artists to the forefront that never would have been brought before.
Right. And are you a Twitter guy or a Facebook guy? Like, obviously, I think social media is important for any sort of band that's doing their thing or artist. Do you like to sort of be, you know, active on social media to communicate with your fans?
Yeah, I'm really active on Facebook. And I just started up with Twitter, just simply the time factor. Twitter, I find, requires a lot more sort of time to, you know, once you start a Twitter, it's sort of everybody jumps on board and it starts, you go, when do I jump off? Facebook's sort of more my style in terms that I can blog and, you know, write about experiences where, you know, Twitter gives you 140 characters. Hey, I am doing this right now.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a photo, right? So I prefer to, you know, I'm a songwriter, so I'm a storyteller.
Right. Okay.
So I do like Facebook a lot. I get a lot of interaction on that, and I use that as a forum to talk about a lot of different things.
Talk to us about your single In the Country. You know, where did it come from? What's it about? And what do you want your, you know, fans and new fans to take away from it?
Well, I wrote this whole record. I just wrote about my experiences growing up. It's sort of full circle for me. When I started it, that's all I was doing. I was just writing what I knew. And the whole Dark Horse sound was me trying to write without trying, if I could put it that way. Mm-hmm. In the Country is, I grew up on a farm as a kid. And, you know, the older you get, the more sort of nostalgic you get about those years. And so I consider the Dark Horse record just a letter to myself. You know, without sounding cliche, that's really what it is. And every single song that's on the record is something that I lived.
Okay.
You know, when you're writing for other people, you tend to try and write inside their head. You know, you write songs for them about what they want, but it's always third person. Dark Horse is completely first person.
Would you ever consider heading back to the country on some level? Because it's funny that you said you're a farm kid, because I am too. My parents are still, you know, doing the thing with my brother, and I try to help out when I can. But I'm not there as much. It's weird because I, you know, I love my computers. I love doing all my audio stuff. But then when I, you know, I go home and lift a hay bale, I'm like, this is what I should be doing on some level. You know, it's like an internal battle. Do you have that internal battle?
I do. And, you know, I lived in New York for years and commuted back and forth between Vancouver Island and Long Island. And I would, you know, whenever I was in New York, I would miss the country. And whenever I was in the country, I'd miss the city. I eventually moved back to Vancouver Island. And I find that I'm much more connected with my writing because I'm here. It's mm-hmm. quiet, you know, mm-hmm. and I literally do live out in the country now.
Wow, that's awesome. It's really funny. I feel like you and I are living parallel lives, because I was in Toronto for a while and doing my radio thing. And I just, it was weird. Like, I was happy to be there, but there was this constant like yearning to be able to be closer to home, to just like, if I wanted to on an afternoon, to just drive out and hang out with the folks and the animals. So it's weird
yeah.
how like now, you know, I've made it work out where I'm close enough to be there, but it's weird. It's like this internal guilt. And it's weird because I remember being a kid and like wanting the big sort of flashy lifestyle. And now it's funny, 'cause like you said, as you get older, you go back to that time when you were a kid.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think we're always sort of grounded when we're younger. You know, that's the thing that we base our whole life on is what we learn growing up. And so, you know, you never really leave home in your heart. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about. I think a lot of people, you know, relate to that.
I wanted to ask you as well on the songwriting tip for just a second. I just a couple of days ago, I had the opportunity to interview, I guess, pop star, if you will, Cody Simpson. And, you know, he's only 17, but he's doing very well, has over 6 million Twitter followers and so on. And he's a very grounded person. I've had the chance to interview him a few times. And it's funny because I asked him, he's going to be writing a new album soon and he's going to be doing it in Los Angeles. And I said, you know, do you find Los Angeles inspiring to write? Because I said, you come from Australia, which is obviously so gorgeous. And he like flat out, without, you know, breaking stride, said, no, Australia is much more inspiring for me to write. So do you feel that same way? Like, even though a lot of people, I would say, would have said when you were in New York, oh, you were in such an inspirational place to write. Was it better in New York or better at home?
It was always better at home. As far as writing goes, always better at home. Because it's less, you know, you find the less distractions that you have as a writer, the easier it is to stay in the room. Obviously, when you're in New York, mm-hmm. there's a million distractions outside.
Right.
Hey, let's take a break and go do this. Let's take a break and go do that.
Uh-huh.
Right? So I find at home, that's kind of my happy spot. I own my own recording studio. I built it in my backyard. And that's where I work. I come out. I work out here 10, 12 hours a day.
Wow. I think a lot of people don't realize how dedicated you have to be as a songwriter. You know, that you have to, like, especially like you said, you tend to craft and you're not cranking out assembly line product. So.
Right. Sure.
Joining us.
I think that's really important.
I wanted to ask you as well, you know, with regards to the band, where do you see yourself in the next like 18 months? Like in the past, I would have said, you know, what's coming up for you in the next like 5 years, but you know, things don't work that way anymore. So is touring on the block and what do you want to accomplish with the album?
Absolutely. I mean, the only way now to win fans really is to do it the old school way. And that's what I know. I've toured my whole life. So to me, I still think it might be old thinking, but I still think in terms of making a record, going on the road, and you know, winning people over. And it's really necessary to do that now. Unless you have a video that goes viral and you get, you know, you get millions of hits from that video, that's just such a crapshoot, you know. I just sort of believe in the whole authenticity thing. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's really just time to hit the road. We're taking, you know, we're taking offers from agents right now, and that's what it's going to be for the next 18 months. It's just clawing our way to having a career.
Okay.
You know, and you, it's the wonderful thing is that the power is in your hands to do that. You know, it's not my old school days where, you know, I had a major record label deal and, you know, that was heavily funded and, you know, your management's paying out major coin to make all this happen. You can grassroots this stuff now because of social media.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I wanted to ask you, I guess, before I let you go, the album is called Let It Ride, and obviously you're going to go out and do that with the touring. When do you plan to work on another album? Like, obviously when you're touring, I assume it's very difficult to find any time to write. So how do you think you're going to pull that off?
Well, I think we have most of the second record written already.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah. So you know, the process of me and my writing partner, Steve-O, we've written a ton of material. And in fact, when we did the Dark Horse record, we went, okay, there are only certain songs with this album that actually all cohesively fit together.
Okay.
You know, there are some other great songs written, but they don't sound necessarily like this record. They're sort of an evolution as time went on. So, most of that is written and just sort of needs to be finished off.
Gotcha. Okay, perfect. Well, Paul, thank you so much for your time, and we wish you all the best of luck and you know, want to have you back on the show anytime you want.
Thank you, Kelly.
Perfect. That is Paul Lane, again, lead singer of Dark Horse. Make sure to learn all about them on their website, darkhorseofficial.com.
In the country is where I belong. Left my heart in my hometown. In the country, I learned to be strong by keeping my feet on the ground. I wanna go back to when I was young. Wanna do it all over again. When I drove my first car, bought my first guitar, and the first kiss from my girlfriend. Yeah, we dreamed about leaving, getting out on our own. Never knew it, what we had at home. Take me back to the old dusty roads where I ran, where I met my first love, and I joined my first band. Under a blanket of stars where she first held my hand. I miss the feeling of the wide open space and the smell of a warm summer rain. The wind at my back puts a smile on my face. Hear it calling me home again. Held my hand. I grew from a boy to a man.
Remix.
Say something, I'm giving up on you. I'll be the one if you want me to. Anywhere I would have followed you. Say something, I'm giving up on you. Say something, I'm giving up on you. Say something, I'm giving up on you.
Much fun hanging out with you on the show this week. Thank you, as always, to my guests, Dr. Zach Levine, Ryan Carter, and Sean Meehan of Me and May. Here is your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time coming from Jim Morrison. Expose yourself to your deepest fear. After that, fear has no power, and the fear of freedom shrinks and vanishes. You are free. As always, thanks for hanging out. Don't forget to check out all of our social media on our website, kellyalexandershow.com. And of course, check out all of our interviews that we've posted for you on our website, youtube.com/kellyalexandershow. Have a great week. You and I will chat soon.